welcome to another episode of Science Chat, the Science Communication Podcast. I'm Sean Marshall. As we move closer to ESOF 2012 in Dublin, this episode is another retrospective of the ESOF 2010 City of Science programme, which took place in Turin. The intriguingly titled seminar, With Einstein Be on Twitter, Exploring the Potential and Limits of Web 2.0 in Science and Science Communication, was both moderated by Barbara Deal, and Barbara was also one of the speakers. Barbara is Programme Manager at the Centre for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at Saïd Business School in the University of Oxford, United Kingdom. And she recently took time out from her busy schedule to talk to Science Chat about the seminar at ESOF 2010. Barbara, which opportunities did the workshop find that Web 2.0 tools like YouTube, Facebook and Twitter offered to scientists, institutions and the public?
Well, I think the workshop findings demonstrated that these Web 2.0 tools have a lot of potential, but I gauged from the discussion and from our presentation that I don't think they have been yet explored to their fullest potential. So obviously, everybody can point to certain examples in their field and where it works and where it doesn't work. As with other sort of communication tools, I think there is still a lot of uncertainty about the opportunities and the challenges associated with it.
Okay, so it wouldn't be true to say that the workshop found that these tools contributed to the process of knowledge production then?
Well, for my part, so because I covered the part which was dealing with the potential for social media in science and for scientists, and so mainly I highlighted two aspects, which was obviously the potential of Web 2.0 tools for peer review and publishing, and as a second example, highlighted the potential of Web 2.0 for this sort of open notebook approach for scientists. And both of these approaches have, pros and cons and proponents and opponents. And I think it would be risky to say that some people using it, some people completely disagree with using it. They want to use the established channels. But definitely, it's open for discussion, and definitely there's a lot of potential in that.
And do you think this has been mostly driven by the access of scientists being able to publish with these tools, or simply an increase with the public wishing to get their scientific information from these tools?
I got the impression that, depending on what you use these tools for, because obviously, all three of us on the panel come from the science communication side. So I got the impression that their value as communication tools is undisputed, but whether they are fit, whether they are appropriate for science communication, I think that is still sort of very much under discussion. And in some ways, I think it has to be acknowledged that to push science communication within the scientists is still very hard, and it's not something that is sort of readily accepted by scientists to be a worthwhile engagement in general. So obviously, pushing another sort of set of tools in their direction and says now you have to engage with the public on your work using this is meets a lot of reservation and also still meets a lot of reservation and objections.
Did the workshop deal with any safeguards that would be needed with this increased access that Web 2.0 provides for scientists to public scientific results?
Yeah. Well, obviously, the biggest sort of reservations that scientists have, especially when you explore the potential for things like peer review, is still... So the main sort of cons in that field are basically that peer review through publications, established channels, still guarantee quality control. And so when I did the preparation for the workshop, you come across quotations in that space saying that, well, anything else just smacks of sort of assorted nutheads easily publishing their fantasies under the guise of scientific thinking. So, I mean, obviously, you know, their peer review is obviously the lifeblood for science and for quality control in that field. So although there's potential for it out there, and I know that, for example, Nature Publishing Group is inviting scientists to engage via blogs with publications. I'm not sure to what extent it is taken up, but they have definitely created these platforms for engagement. But I think what can be concluded is that especially the scientific establishment is still fairly conservative and sort of fairly not readily open to experimentation in the fields of peer review. A second, obviously very, very major consideration for scientists are sort of IP considerations. So in some countries, for example, patents cannot be granted on any technology that has been published. So obviously you could say, are blogs counting as publications? You know, that's very much an issue that still needs to be resolved.
And do you believe that many scientists are using these tools? Do you think that maybe that there are some scientists out there who would have a preference for engaging the public in this way than through the traditional channels, because it might give them more control over what they can say and over what they can actually, you know, publish?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get the impression that scientists who are very engaged communicators, and, you know, there are quite a few of them around. So, I mean, you know, obviously, if you're talking about the scientific establishment or the scientists, I mean, that you cannot really generalize. So, I mean, there are, you know, quite a substantial number of individuals who think that science communication and engagement with the public is important and is a worthwhile pursuit. So, you know, I think those scientists who do that and to do it regularly, and I think they have established themselves as a trusted source of information. And obviously, you know, you can make the argument and say, you know, scientists should do that directly as opposed to do it through mediators, i.e. press officers or science communicators in the middle. Obviously, that would be great, but, you know, the large majority still says that they still feel uncomfortable with that sort of direct engagement.
And just to go back to an earlier point that you made, even if there are scientists who are more likely to use these tools, do you think that maybe they still will publish through peer review journals? Because, I mean, that's seen as one of the requirements when scientists establish funding, and also to do with the protection of IP. So do you think that it'll always just be, if you like, a small minority of scientists who maybe find a difficulty in getting their work published through the peer review journals who are actually willing to embrace this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the proponents for the using Web 2.0 tools for publications, I mean, obviously, they are very strong advocates of the potential and saying, like, look, I mean, you know, you have this free access to all these tools, and they may help to blow holes in these so-called walls of consensus, because obviously, in some ways, you know, peer review through publications is not allowing sort of dissenting voices to be heard. So obviously there is the potential for that, and obviously, you know, peer review and peer review journal as a quality control mechanism within science are also not infallible. I mean, you had quite prominent cases of scientific misconduct which were not detected, and they were published. So I mean, obviously, you know, there are examples where these tools could help and contribute towards pushing knowledge and scientific boundaries.
Did the workshop find that these type of tools would be more likely to be used in any particular field of science, say, for instance, something that's very controversial, like climate change?
I mean, again, you know, obviously, you know, scientific inquiry feeds on the fact that not all scientists are of the same opinion. And obviously, you know, this debate takes place within the relevant academic communities. But I think essentially when it comes to dealing with scientific work and with debates within the academic community, I think that there's still a certain degree of sort of conservatism surrounding these tools, because I mean, you know, you also have to put yourself in the shoes of someone who then says, okay, you know, I'm just going out there and I'm just publishing all my data online, and then you know, I let everyone see that. So I mean, it's I think it's not yet a debate that has been, you know, satisfactorily concluded, and it may work for some areas of science. So for example, you have the open notebook approach, which is basically an approach to put raw data online and make them freely accessible. And obviously, you know, the proponents say, well, you can increase the rate in which research can progress, and you can reduce the time lost due to the repetition of failed experiments if you just make all these data available. Obviously, also there are some money issues involved, because in some ways, through preventing the fact that you repeat failed experiments, you get more sort of taxpayers. You get more research for taxpayers' bucks. So, I mean, you know, I think the scientists who do practice that, and I think they come more from the physical, so the physical sciences, those ones, and, you know, they have made good, their experiences with it have been very good. I'm not sure to what extent that speaks for the majority of you know, the scientific establishment.
And what about the type of public? I mean, did the workshop identify... Yeah. Any particular demographic of the public that would be more receptive to the use of these tools?
I mean, I got the impression, I mean, we had, our audience was, at the workshop was, I would say, fairly young. So, I mean, I would say, you know, in the sort of mid-20s to mid-30s. And I know, and you know, all these young scientists, I mean, they're using, you know, social media for all their, you know, for large aspects of their social life. I mean, they use Facebook, they use LinkedIn, they sometimes even use sort of specialized tools, and I mean, there are, you know, specialized social media communities for scientists, like ResearchGate. But to what extent these are truly platforms where they discuss progress in their scientific field, or whether these are just tools to create a platform for communities within research which are not dealing with research, so, you know, specialized sort of clubs in the field of, let's say, I don't know, genetics, and you are just trying to connect to people in your field, to other doctoral students in your field or something like that. I think they're used for that, but to what extent they're used to really discuss scientific work, I'm not so sure. But I may be wrong. I mean, you know, I haven't talked to the founders of ResearchGate lately. To what extent it actually reflects or represents academic discourse online.
And finally, Barbara, just one more question that I want to ask you. It's in relation to the title of the workshop. What do you think? Would Einstein be on Twitter?
That question actually was raised at the end, and I think the consensus was that he wouldn't be on Twitter, but he might be on Facebook.
That's a great answer. And on that note, I'd like to thank you very much, Barbara, for talking to Science Chat today.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for another episode of Science Chat. You can find out more about Barbara and the Said Business School at www.sbs.ox.ac.uk/centres/entrepreneurship. And as usual, you can find out more about this and other Science Chat episodes at www.sciencechat.net/WordPress.